Welcome to the Philacrosophy Podcast, where host and lacrosse expert Jamie Monroe will do what he does best, talk about lacrosse. Each episode will provide listeners with education, insights, stories, and lessons about the lacrosse world. We will discuss current events, coaching, philosophies, and college lacrosse recruiting. Now let's get started with your host, Jamie Monroe.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome back to the Philacrosophy Podcast. Really excited to welcome Tommy Schreiber to the podcast. Tommy's one of the greatest midfielders in the game, current PLL champion with the Archers, and really excited to have you on board, Tom. How you doing, man?
I'm great. No, appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, for sure. All right, well, let's dive right in. How fired up are you? I'm sure it's a stupid question, but to win a PLL championship after having been pretty close a few years in a row.
Yeah, I mean, it's awesome. I mean, it's what it's all about. It's why you play. So to have the chance with that group in particular, was incredible. And for me, it's kind of, you know, very few times are you able to be a part of something from the very beginning and then see it. You know, not that, you know, I'm done or hopefully we're not done as a team, but to kind of see you kind of accomplish, you know, something like a championship, being there from the ground floor was really, really special. So it was myself, Ryan Ambler, Matt McMahon, and then the coaching staff were kind of part of the original Archers team 5 years ago. We met it the first time for training camp at IMG. So just kind of see it go from that, you know, culminating into a championship was particularly special. So it, you know, it was awesome. It's everything it's you would think it would be.
Totally. And, you know, really the OG, you know, with Coach Bates having been your college coach and then get to reunite with him in the pros is pretty awesome too, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think it's one of those things where, you know, I don't know how many guys have had the opportunity to get another kind of crack at it with their college coach, but, I had that opportunity. And, you know, to win with him, win for him, frankly, was amazing. And Philadelphia in particular is such like a special place for him. You know, the fact that the game was there, and I know he had a ton of family around. It was just, it was a really, really special experience. And the whole season just felt right. You know, from the very beginning, I just felt like we had the right pieces, not only on field, but off field too. And It was just like a really enjoyable group. You know, and I think if you ask Coach, I think this is probably the most fun he's had too, you know, even if it didn't end in a championship. So that was really the cherry on top. But yeah, to win with him, given our history and everything was amazing.
You guys played such great team lacrosse, you know, really on both sides of the ball. But can you just talk about the mentality a little bit about how you guys got such a good passing sharing of the ball? And just such a good flow and a good connection between all the players.
Yeah. I think it just starts with, you know, just having the right type of guys. I don't think there was a conscious effort in like, hey, but move the ball, like share the ball. We have to, this is how, you know, you're successful. I think guys just kind of understood it. And I think there was from the very beginning, just an understanding of like, hey, like, you know, every guy on our offense is capable of kind of, you know, popping in whatever game, you know, like, you know, anybody could have five goals on our offense. And I think like when you have that and then you have the guys that are kind of like not okay with not contributing, right? Because realistically, nobody feels that way, right? Like when you're dealing with stars, with guys who take their craft seriously, nobody is like, oh, I had zero goals, zero assists, like, but I'm happy with the ground balls I got. Like that, you know, to an extent, you know, can be true, but I think, you know, guys understood that they can contribute beyond goals and assists. And if they did their part, then everybody would kind of benefit. That said, you know, that was never like said out loud or anything. I think we just kind of understood it, you know, and that's probably more a testament to Coach bringing in the right guys.
Yeah. For sure.
And I think the other thing, we're a pretty young team, but I think guys just understand that, you know, every team in the league is loaded. you know, and it's whatever team can figure out how to play the best together. Like, it's not just some corny cliche. It's the truth. And, you know, that's when you're going to be successful as an offense. And then I think the last part of it is just guys are just really, really dedicated and competitive, right? Everybody, regardless of their position, regardless of where they are on the depth chart, on the team, like, they just want to maximize their potential and continue to get better year over year. And, you know, I think if you look at really every guy on our offense, they just elevated their game year over year. Like, a guy like Connor Fields, for example, has been such a high level player for so long. He just kind of continued to climb and climb and climb. And, you know, I think, like, you know, I don't like to get too caught up in the, like, oh, this guy is slept on, or, you know, this guy doesn't get enough love. But, like, Connor Fields is as good as anybody, box and field.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, quietly, like, really, really dominating. And the way he was doing it this year too, like, I don't know how many assisted goals he had. You know, I think he's like taking the number one defender on a PLL team to the rack and scoring goals with guys draped all over him. Like, you know, when you have a guy like that, it opens up a lot of doors for everybody else. So, I mean, I can go guy by guy and kind of speak about all of those dudes, but, you know, I think Fieldsy in particular was just really, really elevated his game. And then defensively, you know, I think you think a little less about, like, team defense and kind of sharing kind of the responsibilities and whatnot. But I think a lot of that starts with Graham. And again, I know I'm kicking things off with, I don't like to kind of get into the, well, this guy's underrated or whatever, but, like, Graham is as good as it gets.
He's crazy.
He really is. And his, it's not just his, you know, physical ability. I think that stands out immediately. Like, you kind of run into somebody who, like, hasn't seen him in person before, and they're just like, wow, like, that's a big dude. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, it is, but he can also move. And the thing that he has is his instincts and his just understanding and his IQ are really off the charts. So when you kind of build around a guy like that, you know, a true eraser, which, like, there's not many in pro lacrosse, just given how talented everybody is, it kind of helps. You know, and Graham is also the type who's, you know, if they're like, hey, Graham, we need you to play off ball defense this game, like, he's not going to blink, if that was best for the team, you know. And then you look at our specialties with Brett Dobson and Mike Sisselberger, and both of those guys were first class the whole way. And Dobber, you know, I think it was great to see him, you know, kind of get that recognition at the end, just because he was so solid all year long. And it was just, he made it look easy, like, just like a very calming presence back there, and just made all the saves he was supposed to, and then stole a couple, and then communicated effectively, cleared well. Like, he's the full package. And, you know, again, like, those guys just fit in the right way, and they're just about the right stuff. So in terms of us being a selfless team, I think there wasn't a conscious effort to say, like, hey, we want to, you know, be about XYZ. It was just kind of those guys understood it, and we had a good time doing it, and just showed up prepared and played the game and had fun.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah,
I got a chance to coach Graham Hosick with the Atlanta Blaze back in 2017 for Coach Hunts, RIP Coach Hunts. I was just blown away. It's like he has superhuman strength. I mean, he's one of the few athletes I've ever seen that can kind of run with you and lift you up and toss you.
Yeah.
Although Latrell Harris can do that too. I mean, he's another guy with sort of superhuman strength too, like, just insane athleticism.
Yeah, no, they both do. And with Graham too, there's just, like, no wasted movement. You know, he just never takes a bad step. His stick is, like, always right where it should be. And then, you know, when you combine that with the strength, he's a tall order. And then, you know, like, and that's the unit that we didn't get to was kind of our short sticks. And, like, Latrell, rightfully so, I think was the shorty of the year. And he's another guy, just, you know, I've been playing with Latrell since he was a senior in high school in the NLL with the Rock. And, you know, it's funny to me that he's still only 25 years old.
It is crazy.
It really is. And he's, he's gotten better every year. And I think he kind of emerged a little bit more of a leader this year with two rookies with him at short stick, which, like, you know, I don't know what the hardest position is to kind of go from college to pro. I mean, there's arguments all over the place, but I'd imagine that's a pretty tough jump, being a short stick, covering, the second or third midfielder on a college roster, going to like covering a second or third guy on a pro roster. It's just, it's difficult. And Connor Marr and Piper Bond, like, those guys were really, really good all year long and bought into it. Weren't afraid to be themselves. And, both of those dudes made huge, huge plays all year long, but in the championship in particular, like, both of those guys played like 5-year vets. And anytime you have those young guys feeling that comfortable and playing with confidence,
it's so huge.
It was big. So just all around, it was just a very, very fun group, and a group that, like, I really respect, frankly, like, and I'm just like grateful to be a part of that crew.
Yeah. Well, I've seen Latrell Harris play for a while because my son Colin played minor lacrosse with him in St. Catharines for 5 yep. years. And he actually went to Mountain Vista High School, played for me, and lived with us for his junior year before he went off to Everest Academy. So it's been fun to watch him grow and develop. Incredible athlete. And it kind of is fun to go guy by guy. I wouldn't mind doing that a little bit, and just because what I would really like to hear, and let's turn it back to the offense for a second, and let's start with Connor Fields. What blows your mind about what that guy does, and what have you learned from him?
Oh, man. So what I've learned specifically, and I know you like to nerd out on this stuff too. Mm-hmm. To me, what, Fieldy is so good at is he can beat his guy without getting slid to. So he like beats him by just enough where they won't slide. And he's so comfortable with pressure that he's still able to make plays. The example that I would use is, like, if you cleanly beat somebody and they can just slide and you're, 15 yards from the goal, it's like you can move the ball on and like create good offense. But for Connor, it's like the way he's able to move and his just, I guess what I would call cadence and mm-hmm. how he moves, right? His change of direction, his change of speed, his change of angle, and then just his ability to create contact and be so comfortable there. Combined with his creativity, it's just, I don't know how you stop him. And I think he's a big part of why we had success in kind of the short clock on the face-offs.
Yeah.
Just because, you can kind of give him the ball and see what happens. You have, here's the ball. Fields, there's 9 seconds, like, go make something happen. And oftentimes he did. Which again, like, he's doing that to the number one defenders, which, like, those guys are freaks. There's 8 teams, and when you're dealing with guys who are training all year long, like, every team has a guy who, is stronger than him, is whatever. But for whatever reason, like, he's able to make it work. And again, he's really elevated his game, and he's just such a tough cover. With the ball on his stick. And again, he's another guy that's not, demanding the ball more than he would need it. Like, he kind of lets the game come to him and just makes plays. And it's like, and again, kind of coming from, his experience in the bubble a couple of years ago, then he kind of came in and played midfield for us, for like, I think it's 2 seasons. And for him to, just kind of play that role and not necessarily be okay with it, but, just not have it become a distraction and just have him continue to get better, and then to see him get rewarded playing attack and being, one of the top guys in the league, at that attack position. Like, you could go all over our roster and we've had guys willing to do that. And, as a pro coach, like, there's so few spots. So if you have guys who are willing to kind of play out of position and like just make it work, and not have it become any sort of issue or distraction, I mean, I think that's, the recipe for a great team. And then to see that sort of sacrifice and mindset get rewarded from a, you know, bona fide superstar, is pretty awesome.
It is. He's so deceptive. It's amazing too, because when you think about him in college, like he played with Lyle and he was like an off-ball guy and nobody really realized, you know, that. I mean, he can kind of do it all. He can play whatever role he kind of has to play. I mean, he's unbelievable without the ball. He's great at shooting it. Obviously he can be a time and room shooter if that's what he needed to be. His feeding is like off the charts. And I feel like being in an offense that just really, you know, where he just, it flowed for him. And I think that's probably his own, you know, part of his development is just figuring out how to let the game come to him when he needs to. And it's incredible to watch him play. The deception he uses, just mind blowing. It's just, he hitches in hezzies, you know, better than anybody I've ever seen. He's just got this unbelievable way of drawing a check to open up the window to make the next play. And it's just, it's wild to watch. It's hard to it's hard to do that stuff.
Yeah, he has crazy instincts. Yeah, and you know it's actually like, and like yourself, like I'm somebody who's like, my approach to the game has always been, how can I take something from these other guys? Mm-hmm. And I can sort of articulate what he does, but it's very difficult to, you know, for lack of a better term, copy. You know, and I want to add that layer to my game. It's just like, it's difficult. I don't even know how you develop it. I wish I knew. I wish I knew for myself. I wish I can, like, you know, and again, it's a comfort level, I think, is a big part of it, with getting checked, with kind of getting pressure. Mm-hmm. But again, just like a very, very difficult skill, you know, to kind of hone in. And he's, you know, whatever it is, like, he's got it.
Yeah. It's what you said earlier that was so interesting regarding not beating your defender too much is really interesting, because everyone kind of grows up with like, run by your guy and like break ankles and destroy people. But, you know, there's this, I was talking to Justin Ward on the Army offensive coordinator last week on this podcast, and we were talking about the concept of dominoes versus neutral. It's just a cool concept of when you create an advantage and the dominoes start falling. And it's sort of it was a basketball terminology, where when the dominoes start falling, you start kicking the ball and moving it. But the interesting thing in lacrosse is that if you allow the dominoes just to go on time with all the pulls, you're probably going to have a chance. The defense is going to have a chance to get back to neutral and recover really quickly, which is basically what you said a second ago. And, his ability to stop the dominoes from falling, to be able to, or make them late, which then makes all the dominoes late. And I'm curious how you then try to do that in your game, because you've been a speed guy, you know, the ability to run past people and get shots off on the run. But how that's probably one of, you know, it's your own, you know, individual constraint of how you learn to play. And so one of the reasons why you're like, I'm trying to learn how to do what he does, but it really comes down to sort of slowing down, which I would imagine box across and playing for the Rock for all these years has helped you a ton. But can you talk a little bit about how you approach that concept when you have the ball?
Yeah. And I think just quickly going back, you know, that the dominoes thing, I had never heard that, but it makes perfect sense. And I would say, like, that's the skill we're talking about with Fieldy in this case is the ability to get your own shot.
Yeah.
And to me, as a Dodger, like, that has to be a legitimate threat to me. Like, the dummy dodge, like, at our level, you know, and at the collegiate level, and probably even, you know, upper tier high school level, like, it doesn't serve the purpose, right? Like, you're not earning any attention from the defense. So, you know, my kind of counter to that has just been, if I understand where you're sliding from and can really understand where the second and even like the third slide is, like, I've always tried to listen to defensive coaches and, you know, as a midfielder, and especially one that, you know, grew up as a traditional, you know, to like, I was kind of part of the early stages of like specializing O&D middies, I guess, but like as a kid, you know, and even in high school, it was kind of two way. So I understand the defensive stuff, and yeah, pretty much what they're doing is leaving the furthest guy from the ball open.
Yep.
And if I could develop a skill set to be able to get that guy the ball, then that's, you know, in some ways accomplishing the same thing that Fieldy is. It's like understanding the defense in a different way.
Yeah.
But that's kind of been my counter, and you know, beating guys cleanly or like trying to free your hands and being able to kind of feed from far away with either hand, was like a pretty conscious decision to be able to get those guys the ball rather than, okay, I'm going to draw a slide, bang it one more, get it to the backside and let them dodge a poor approach. If I could just get it there consistently and not turn the ball over, then I want to be able to do that. And then what happens is, like, if I can be a threat to do that, it's harder for them to pre-rotate. It's harder for them to slide. And I want to kind of evaluate that as I'm starting to dodge.
And are you actually I'm sure everyone at your level is seeing the sliders, but you're really noticing the second slide as well each time. And are you trying to influence them, or are you just trying to see the skip lanes?
I would say I'm not necessarily trying to influence them. I'm more so just taking into account where they are and their body language, frankly. You know, and then part of it is understanding, you know, which of my teammates is in that spot. You know, like it'll differ, you know, if it's a Mac O'Keefe, or if it's Connor Fields, you know, like if, you know, and I think you're like constantly sort of evaluating those sorts of things. And the other thing I'm kind of looking at is where they are on the field. And if I go to my right versus I go to my left, are they going to be in the lane? Mm-hmm. Is that defender left-handed or right-handed? Is he an on-ball guy? Is he an off-ball guy? Is he going to knock this pass down even if he knows it's coming? Those are the sorts of things I'm trying to prepare for prior to the game. Good news is, like, I've kind of been around at this point, and you only play so many teams, so you kind of have a pretty good idea of who's who. So that's one of the things I've tried to do. And then, you know, in terms of kind of bringing that Fieldy sort of beat 'em, not beat 'em thing, like, I've tried to do that. And it's slowing down. And Coach Bates used to say that to me in college all the time. It's just like, slow down. And like, I never understood it. I was like, what do you mean? Like, you're supposed to go fast. Like, you play the game fast. But, you know, if you look at some guys who've really been successful, particularly box first guys, it's this kind of stick to the inside, leverage, change of pace, you know, craftiness sort of game. And, you know, box has certainly helped develop that part of my game. And I think probably as I get older, and, you know, I'm going to continue to train hard and still try to be fast and strong. But I think, you know, if you can develop that part of your game, it just increases your longevity as well.
Yeah, for sure. And so, you know, how do you set yourself up to have the space to attack with speed, to be able to see those skips? Is there a way that you kind of think about that?
So this is one of the things that I've really tried to pass along, like, development wise to, like, to younger kids that I'm working with. Like, the defenders are so good now. And again, like, I learned a lot from defensive coaches and just kind of listening or just even observing as to what they're working on. And a lot of what those guys do is approach, right? Like, if they have a good approach, if they can force a guy one way or just crowd the guy they're trying to cover, like, they're putting themselves at a pretty good advantage, right? Because then the defense knows where that slide will come from. They're putting themselves in a position where it's difficult to get beat. But if you could kind of anticipate that, and, you know, a lot of it is spacing, and you can kind of just hunt opportunities to kind of catch the ball on the run and dodge, like, with your feet already moving, that's just a tough thing to cover, right? Like, if you're a defender, this guy is 6-7 yards away from you, is already at a 3-quarter sprint and could go either way. That's going to put them at a disadvantage. And I think anytime I see those opportunities, I try to take them. Even if it's a little further away from the net, you know, I want to make their life difficult. I want to make that approach difficult.
And so therefore you're trying to, so your teammates deliver you the ball. You've already kind of started your dodge without the ball and they deliver it to you in stride, and you could take different angles too. So you could kind of not just drift, but actually like angle straight ahead and be able to catch the ball.
Yep. And then I'm doing a lot of drifting too, right? Like if those opportunities aren't there, like I am going to catch and drift and bounce around. And like, that's the time where I'm looking at the defense. I'm like evaluating what's what. And you know, I think the other thing with a drift is you're, you know, quietly almost like lulling them into a position where they don't have a great approach. You know, and sometimes guys are better than that than others, but you know, you can kind of bounce around and kind of change just slightly your angle or which direction you're going even and get an advantage, just like almost like, without anybody even realizing it. So those are the two things I think like pre-catch or pre-possession that I think like you could really give yourself a nice advantage.
For sure.
You know, and put the defense almost on their heels before you even catch it.
How do you use deception to sort of open up your operation? I mean, I've seen you do a lot of different things, but I'm curious your mindset on using deception once you kind of put yourself in position to attack. How are you using deception to try to look off that guy that you want to skip to or jam it inside or get your own shot?
Yeah. I mean, I think you have to be a legitimate threat to score. Otherwise those lanes aren't really there or, you know, they're ready. You know, and defenses aren't, you know, they're not going to pre-rotate if you're not a threat to score. They're, you know, they're just going to stay on their guy. So I think one, you know, either early in the game or just historically for other players, like you just have to prove that. You have to prove you could go get your own shot and hammer it in the back of the net. Because if you don't, then there's no incentive to slide. And if there's no incentive to slide, it kind of drastically impacts your ability to feed. I think from there, you know, just I think your eyes are such a powerful tool. You know, I think it's not really a no look pass. Like the way I teach it, you know, as I see it and as my stick is coming forward is when I'm going to look away. So I see it the whole way. Right. I'm just going to kind of look it off when I can. And then I think, you know, the other thing I've like consciously worked on over time is just being able to feed with both hands. And at different angles. Yeah. So, and then I'd say the last point is understanding where those lanes are. I've spent, you know, again, I've tried to employ this into my like coaching, but certainly for myself too, is I think there's like a skill. I don't have a great name for it. You might. I think you have great names for this sort of stuff, but you're kind of just, if you're picturing just kind of running down the alley, we'll call it, and being able to kind of step back, switch your hands, it just opens up a feeding lane that they can't really get to, at least the guy on ball, you know, and like those sliding lanes and those, you know, if you're able to change direction and just slightly change that, I guess, plane and do it quickly, it just opens up a lot of looks.
Yeah,
I think over time, like I've understood where those looks are. And I think even beyond your eyes, your body language can suggest that you're doing one thing and you can do the other.
The open up.
Yeah,
I call it open up. But the open up allows you to really skip it to a pipe too, because it like just makes it look like you're throwing it back out top, or you can basically get a rotation to occur on the open up, right?
Yeah, I had a feeling you'd be able to work a little better. But yeah, it's that open up step. And I think like that's something younger players should consciously work on. I know it's something that I've done. And I think to me, it's the footwork is really important. I think you're not backpedaling away from your defender. You're kind of taking one step back and then bringing your body, you know, not just as you're changing your hands, you're bringing your body back up the field. So you're balanced, right? You're not throwing off your back foot. You're not backpedaling and, you know, making a bad pass. Like you have full body control. And again, like, I think it's, practice, and that open up step just opens up lanes that are not covered. I don't think they can cover both, right? I don't think they can cover if, you know, say you're going down the right alley. They might have that if you are trying to throw a skip pass with your right hand through the defense, they might have that covered. But if you could take that step back, switch your hands to your left and get it out quick, like, I don't know if they can cover that off ball. And it's a great way to re-dodge.
Totally. The open up re-dodge is sick, because if they overplay that, you're gone underneath.
Yeah, Teat's the best at that. Yeah. That's like he comes like back up the field to his left and then can kind of swim, roll to the outside, hitch. Like, I think that's a big part of the game now, and just something that I've tried to do with both hands.
Yeah. And being able to do it with both hands is huge. I mean, a lot of people can do it on one side, but it's hard to do on both sides. And it's really interesting too, because everybody knows that you want to get your stick to the middle from the perspective of having a better angle to shoot. But those feeding angles, like you said, when you're going down the righty alley and feeding it through the defense righty, it's a smaller window,
right?
Because you just can't get it across wing to wing as quite as easily. But that's a good topic too, because you are able to skip it through. You talked about different release points, I'm not sure how you said it, but you do feed underhand and sidearm a lot, and it's, you know, frankly, there's a lot of people out there that'll be like, well, you know, everything's got to be overhand, but I don't think those skip passes get through PLL defenses if you don't, you know, for the same reason it's hard for a goalie to see, it's hard for a defender to see. Now, some coaches say, well, it's hard to catch it. I don't know if I agree with that. I think it's hard to catch a feed underhand if you're inside, but I think on a skip pass, it's not that hard to catch. And I think it's like critical that you can throw that.
Yeah. And we practice it.
Yeah.
I bring guys out, because I didn't realize it until I started playing with Grant. I was right. this is terrible. So, but then, you know, I had him throw me a million of those passes, and now it's not difficult, right? You know, and again, like, I'm not here to say that it should be one way or the other at scale, right. You know, for younger kids, but for us at our level, and my approach has always been just a ton of practice. Like, I feel more comfortable and throwing it from that angle than I would overhand. Like, I could feel very comfortable throwing like a lefty underhand pass 25 yards right on somebody's stick. But if you asked me to throw it overhand, that, like, I couldn't put the same velocity on it, and I probably couldn't put it in the same spot just because I haven't repped it as much.
Yeah.
But I do think
more predictable too. It's hard, you know, just like for the same, basically when you swing sidearm underhand, it, you know, for the same reason, like, you, if you're coming across the middle right-handed and you like to pull it to the near side and it's showing far side, it does the same thing to the skip pass defender.
And it's faster. It's just quicker to get it right from here than it is to come back and make that pass for me. And again, like, I kind of made that decision a long time ago, and I was going to rely on my wrists. And even if I sacrificed a little bit as a shooter, you know, in terms of getting my hands back, like, I felt, you know, for a catch and shoot scenario, if I could get it out that much quicker from a release standpoint, like, I don't care if that's going to sacrifice 5 miles an hour on the gun, but if, you know, the goal, it's the same sort of time. If that, you know, if it's 105 miles an hour, but it takes 3/4 of a second to get off versus 100 miles an hour and it takes a half a second, you're kind of accomplishing the same thing. So that's kind of the trade-off that I've, like, you know, sort of, I'm good with it. Like, I can live with that.
You mentioned Grant Ament and the way he throws those underhand skip passes, and what you took from that. One of the things I always notice about him is he throws it almost right at the defender's head, their helmet, you know, because, you know, everyone sort of is taught to put their sticks in lanes, and it makes it almost impossible when you sort of zip it right past them. Do you think about that as well?
100%. Yeah. You're handcuffing them.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, it's, again, like, there are guys who are great at it. There are guys who can, like, kind of bait that. And, like, that's, like, we work on that after practice, because the D guys want to be able to knock those down. And like Matt McMahon has kind of like led that charge on our defense. And, you know, it's really, you put, I'm on one side of the field and you put, oftentimes with us, it was Ryan Ambler and Matt would cover him and he knows the pass is coming and I would move around. Ryan would move around. We'd make Matt move. And, you know, oftentimes the closer you could throw it at his face, like the harder it was for him to get to. But, you know, he got a lot better at it. I started to understand their body language a lot better. You know, and I think like from an off-ball perspective too, like you can kind of understand where you're putting the defense at a tough, in a tough position too. Like if you're standing still, they can stay in that lane. But if you're constantly, if the dodger and the eventual, you know, shooter are both changing those lanes, even if it's two or three steps one way or the other, they're out of position. So being an off-ball defender, like if guys are standing still, you're making their job really easy, which is day one stuff. But, you know, if you really break it down, it's like, it's pretty high level, I think.
Yeah. I worked for a guy named Mike Waldvogel, who was the head coach at Yale. I was the assistant back in the 90s, and he probably played against your dad back in the day. They were probably like world team players together back in the day, but he always used to talk about, as a defense, he was a Hall of Fame defenseman, and that he would always sort of put the head of his stick when he was off ball in the skip lane. He wouldn't try to put it in the lane. He would try to put it almost like near his helmet, so that he could, because he's like, you can always reach quickly to knock something down, but you can't get it when it's in tight. It always stuck with me. And I always sort of reverse that from the offensive side to be able to sort of zip it through. And also the way you kind of release it a lot is like almost like a lever. Sometimes I feel like, you know, maybe even more lefty than righty, but you sort of just pop it out of there.
Yeah. And to me, that's like a time thing.
Yeah.
You can kind of go from just looking like you're carrying the ball to getting it out much faster than if you got it all the way back and like threw it with like picture perfect overhand form. You know, again, I've practiced it forever. So I, you know, I'm not taking guys out on the field and being like, yeah, you should sling it from your hip and your ankle like on day one, you know. But I think the other piece of it too is like the stick technology has improved so much that guys are able to add that to their game. I think that's possible. So, you know, is that like a basic skill that every kid should learn in fifth grade? I don't know. I mean, my wife's due with a baby boy on Friday. So I don't know. I don't know how I'll teach him, but for me, it's hurt.
You've figured it out. And I think the big thing is that there's not exactly one right way to do anything. And in fact, the key is to be able to do a lot of things and let the situations dictate what works rather than, you know, I think the issue is that most people don't do what you do because they've been sort of told not to. And I think that there's a time and place for a lot of different things. And so that's what's pretty interesting about it. On the topic of skip passes too, do you, with your box background, I know what I noticed with Canadians, I mean, Jeff Tietze guy does this all the time too, but they skip it. It's like everyone knows to shoot screenshots, but screen feeds, throwing it around actions, throwing it through someone who's clearing through, throwing it around pickers, throwing it around defenders. Grant Amant does it all the time. He'll just wrap a feed around somebody and it'll just like whiz right past, you know, the skip guy who probably would have caught it. If it wasn't the fact that you can't see it until it's too late and it's right by you. Do you think about that at all?
Yeah. I mean, I think in box, so much of that game is reading body language, because the off-ball defenders have so much more going on. You know, like I think in field, you can set up a little bit more. You can communicate through, okay, I'm the two, I'm the three, whatever. Like in box, it's controlled chaos. You know, and, you know, oftentimes, like, those guys are – they're – the box defenders, because of the nature of the game, like, they're excellent, in my opinion, at knocking passes down and anticipating and understanding the lanes. Like, field defenders, like, they just haven't had as many reps. Yeah.
And they're so, stickers, it's a little harder to move it.
Yeah, 100%. But I do think like playmaking, feeding in box, like a lot of it is anticipation and reading body language.
What are some things that you read, like specifically that you're looking at, whether they're looking or not, basically, probably, right?
Yeah, where they're looking, if they're tied up in some sort of pick, where their stick is, what hand they are. Oftentimes it's like pretty easy to diagnose that in box. The righties cover the lefties cover the righties. And then just who it is too, right? Like there are some guys like, you know, Joel White was like the guy, like even if he's like looking at the ground and his stick's in his left hand, like I'm probably not throwing it around him. You know, like he knows, like he's like, he's too good at it. So understanding, you know, who those guys are, you know, and for me in box, like it's different angles too, you know, where it's not lefty righty, it's being able to go behind your back. It's being able to flip it. And just timing, you know, I mean, I think like, obviously you watch Dane Smith and like the crazy numbers that he puts up there, like his like anticipation is crazy. Like he just understands where guys should be. And like another like huge thing that I think gets neglected in player development is just throwing accurate passes and throwing hard accurate passes, and like probably more so in field. Like box is just a totally different approach. Like it's just like a lot of playing games and like getting the reps through that, and like you have to throw great passes. But you know, I think it's a combination of all those things. Like Dane's passes are just like so crisp and like right in the shooter's, you know, those guys could shoot the ball immediately. Like when you watch Teat, like he's just such a phenom in anticipation, understanding where the defense is, where his guys are, and then just like his subtle kind of movements with his eyes and body language and that kind of open up step. Like I just, again, like I've seen him do so much off of that. You know, I try to be as much of a student of the game as I can. And I think like in box, like I'm just like at a lower level, you know, in terms of understanding some of that stuff. And it's fun. You know, that's part of the challenge. And that's part of why, like, I've enjoyed it so much, is because it's lacrosse at the end of the day. But like, there are, once you get into the weeds and get into some of these nuances, like those are the sorts of things that I'm trying to learn and figure out.
So let's talk a little bit about box. One of my favorite topics, and it's been fun to watch you play and get better. How would you sort of characterize, you know, your evolution from field to box and how you've gotten better, and what were sort of the initial things you kind of really had to figure out, and what are you sort of honing these days?
Initially it was like all instinct. Like, you know, I don't think
being an athlete,
yeah, I mean, I wasn't thinking all that much. Like I, you know, I was super lucky at the very beginning to kind of, and almost nobody gets these sorts of opportunities where like the role they needed on the team at the time was like a carry guy, you know, yeah, to have the ball and go make plays. And like, that's the easiest part of box, somebody who's never played, is kind of being the guy almost, which is like a weird, like you wouldn't think that, but
and almost no Americans get to do that.
Nobody does. It's just like, I got super, super lucky with that because
Casey Powell did, you know, there's a few guys that have, but not many.
Yeah. But it really was like, I think if more American guys were put into that role, like you'd see more guys. Yeah. Like guys would break into the league much easier. Like it would be very difficult to be, you know, the seventh or eighth guy on a loaded offense, and you're asked to go like set picks and move the offense, and like from time to time get some shots. You know, like I got to like go right into the center of the power play and like carry the ball 60% of the time. So, you know, for me, I was just kind of playing lacrosse, and if somebody was open, I was throwing it to him, and I was like dodging. You know, I was like, okay, I'm going to try to like stutter step and get over the top, or like go underneath and dive. So early on, that was kind of how I was approaching things. And the last few years, I'm trying to understand it more. Like, I think I've, you know, a lot of the goals that I'm scoring like are not like just 5-on-5 flow of the offense goals. And, you know, it's like, I'm trying to like make things a little easier. And then, you know, for me, it's like, I took a billion shots last year. So I want to shoot 50, 75 times less and score more goals. And I think a lot of that has to do with shot selection, off ball play, you know, and then just obviously executing the shot itself. But for me, that's like understanding, you know, what the goal, because I've had no concept of like what the goalie is looking at, seeing. So I've tried to talk with other goalies and just understand it a little bit more, because like in field lacrosse, like if you shoot the ball hard and accurate, like you're going to score goals. Like in box, it's just kind of a different approach. Mm-hmm. And again, it kind of comes back to those couple things I just mentioned in terms of like catching the ball in a good spot and either shooting it quick or getting some sort of pump or hitch or whatever and moving the goalie. And then executing on the inside is another big one for me. I think, you know, I've tried to watch a lot of Lyle and Curtis Dixon. Like, I think those guys, like, when they're right on top of the crease, like, they just cash in at such a high level. And I just feel like I've left like a lot on the table there. So that's something I'm working on. And then, you know, some of the stuff that you've just discussed, like understanding the feeding a little bit more. Like, I think I like naturally like can see guys open and whatnot, but like, that's a part of my game that I really want to improve. And then just, the shooting thing, like shooting that many times, is like killing me, like mentally, like it's just, so a lot of that is just kind of understanding where the looks are. And, you know, even early on in preseason, like playing with Mark Matthews and just seeing how he operates and then hearing him talk about it. He's super knowledgeable about like where looks will be and things like body language. And, you know, I'm trying to learn as much as I can. And my approach has always been just trying to add new layers to my game and kind of develop year over year. And those would be a couple of things in box in particular that I'm kind of looking at for this season.
It was interesting when you were talking about, you know, when you release it quickly versus when you have to pump and hitch. And I feel like, you know, in the US, everybody just kind of focuses on release it as fast as humanly possible, which is fine, except for the fact that when you pump and hitch to find your shot, to find a screenshot, it alters the approach and it also makes goalies move. And that's why I think you see so many Canadians doing that. Plus, they with a shorter stick, they're going to knock down more balls if you don't. You know, if you just sort of show a regular swing, they will. It's just closer proximity and shorter sticks and stuff. But how much have you sort of learned how to move approaching defenders and goalies as it relates to that sort of hard, the low pump and lift and all those things that you see everybody doing?
Yeah, I think I've like made some progress there. You know, like the example that I would use is like, I try to ask at halftime, like Brandon Miller's on our staff. And like a guy like that is just such an asset. It's like, hey, what are you seeing? And he can just say like, hey, he's dropping, or like, you'll even hear guys on the bench be like, oh, goalie's really dropping when you go low. Like, that stuff to me is just, it doesn't click yet. Like I don't see that. Like, I couldn't tell you like, oh yeah, he's really leaning to this way, or he's really dropping every time you, like, I hear guys say it, I can apply it when they say it. Mm-hmm. That's a big part of my game that I want to develop is like understanding that goalie position a little bit more. And like understanding what movements are making them do what things, you know, like again, in field, like I understand it. Like if you drop your hands to the middle of the field, like they have to kind of go with you a little bit, mm-hmm. you know, in box, like right now I can, you know, take you through what they would do if like you kind of dropped your hands and then came up, like, but in the game itself, like it's not second nature for me just yet. And I feel like if I can get better at understanding some of that stuff, especially on the inside, that should help a lot. So it's fun. You know, it's like cool being 31 years old and a 10-year pro, like kind of working on relatively basic things, just because I had to learn in like a different way. You know, like I didn't start by learning the basics of box lacrosse. I just got like thrown into it, which like was a huge advantage in a lot of ways. And then in other ways, it's like, I'm pretty low IQ in some ways. So it's just, it's an interesting dynamic.
Yeah. I feel like in box two, one of the weird things is you almost have to shoot it where the goalie is sometimes. Like you can't, you're not going to see net. If you see net and you try to put it there, it can work, but it seems like that's like the, maybe one of the most counterintuitive adjustments that a field player has to make is that you're not just going to see net. You have to put it in spots and like, you know, and the goalie kind of knows what the other thing is. The goalies are just like, they adapt unbelievably. As soon as you score them on a goal, you're not scoring that goal again. You know, it's like you figure them out and you got to figure something else out.
They're so smart. And it's kind of like, it was like this when I was in school, like studying too. Like I always retained things a little bit better when, you know, I was teaching somebody else. Sure. So like working with some kids in box has like actually helped my game a fair amount, because I'm just like seeing things as a coach, and seeing things develop slower, frankly, like kind of helps you to see it. And then, just like kind of training a little bit with other guys, like in a similar position to me, like as of late, I don't know if you've gotten to spend any time with any of the Cursts, but those guys are just
not really, but man, I love those guys.
Yeah. Just from afar, you could tell, but like Cole Hurst, who, you know, scored his first goal with Halifax in their first game the other day. We don't live too far from one another, and we've been like kind of shooting and training together the last couple of weeks prior to my injury. So, you know, I've just been trying to like help him through like the things that I learned as I was going. And sometimes it helps to kind of talk about it. Like, and for me, like, I think I've probably made some strides just by virtue of being around him and like trying to work through things with him. So, box is fun, 'cause it's like, I'm like a kid. I'm trying to retain as much as I can at all times. And sometimes like, that's like I have to do a little less of that and just play. But
I know that's the tough part, because you have to be able to just do it in real time, but having an understanding of all these things is kind of critical. And then putting it together is like the hard part.
Right.
Have you ever talked to Darris Kilgore?
No, you've mentioned him.
I should connect you with him. He could be unbelievable source of information on shooting, on everything, man. He's like literally one of the smartest guys I've ever met. And whenever I think about shooting, if I ever have a question about shooting, I always get in touch with Darris, and he talks about so many different elements of deception. And he talks about deception too, not just in, you know, where it looks like you're shooting, but when you release it. Do you think much about like delaying or speeding up releases? I mean, you release it quick in field, and we talked a lot about that with your feeding. But I kind of feel like the hitches and the delayed releases is what really destroys a goalie sometimes too.
Yeah. So Jack Runkle, who's my age, was national champ at Loyola, has spent some time with me in box, which has been awesome. So we got him some pad, like Rosie, like scraped together some pads up in Toronto. And, so we have stuff for Runk, down here in New Jersey. So, and I've learned a lot from him, just like hearing the goalie perspective. Mm-hmm. And he's like made this analogy of like a metronome, you know, just hearing the tap, tap, mm-hmm. tap, tap. And like, if you could release the ball in between, you know, the two hits, like that's when things are tough. So there's that timing, and then also just angles. Like if you move a little bit, like the goalie's probably not going to readjust. If you move like a little bit more, you know, they might think about it. If you move a little bit more, they will have to move. And if you could shoot it then, mm-hmm. you know, that's difficult for them. So just understanding some of that stuff and hearing his perspective has been really, really cool for me. And you know, again, it's something I'm trying to, and you see it, like you see guys that are like shooting the ball, you know, for lack of a better term, just slowly.
Like Dane Doby.
Yeah, I mean, like those guys, like, you know, Teat again, like that's just sometimes right. just releases it, just finds its way in the back of the net, and it's
gotta give the guy a chance to get out of the way.
Yeah, I mean, it's it's just, again, like my approach for the first 20 years of lacrosse was catch, get it out as fast as you can. And now there's just another element to it, which again,
and it's not like that's wrong either. I mean, it's critical. I mean, the Canadians are one time, you know, outside shots when, but it's more when the goalie's on the other pipe. That's when they were going to release it that quick, because otherwise you kind of have to freeze the guy or get in the middle of that metronome.
Yeah. And it's knowing when to kind of use which technique.
Yeah.
That I think comes from experience and being pretty conscious and intentional about your preparation.
Let's talk a little two-man game in box. Where are you at with that in terms of like learning how to read picks and use deception and hesitations to try to get two-on-one or carry a guy with you, or, you know, set up a pass for like a nation's look or something like that? I mean, where are you at with that, and how does that translate to fields?
Constantly evolving. I feel like I'm learning new stuff about, it's something as simple as like two on two lacrosse. Like there's just an endless way of kind of splicing it up, but constantly learning. And like, for me, like I've always focused on being the one with the ball on my stick in a two-man game. Mm-hmm. And I think both in box and field, like I'm trying to learn that other position as much as I can now, you know, as like, okay, if they switch it early, where I should set this pick, where, you know, when should I kind of follow, when should we cut the backside, things like that. You know, both to kind of going back to like just shooting the ball before like getting to high percentage spots to kind of catch and shoot. And just like understanding, you know, both as like a feeder with the ball on my stick, or feeder or scorer, and then just the off ball spot too, just kind of understanding how the defense has to react to certain things, I think just opens up your understanding a whole lot more. And then in field, it's a little different because you're further from the net, more times than not. Yep. But I do think like there's just so much opportunity in field in a two-man game. Like if you get the right guys in the right spots, and I don't know, again, I usually have a pull, so I'm typically not setting a ton of picks. Although, again, this probably isn't like great across the board at scale, but because it happens so infrequently, oftentimes the defense isn't prepared. Mm-hmm. Like they don't know what to do if you pick with a pole that doesn't want to lose their matchup on a short stick. Right. And sometimes it gets, you know, like I'll do a little bit of that. If there's like an O guy stuck on somebody else and they have the ball, and like, I'll go bring the pole over there and see what they do. And more times than not, they screw it up. So it's just two-man game stuff is awesome. It's kind of endless in terms of how you can use it both in box and field. So I'm constantly just kind of trying to learn. And I'd say there's probably a little more focus at this point as being the off-ball guy rather than the ball carrier for me.
Who are some of the guys in box that you've watched and learned from and tried to take, whether they be teammates? You played with Dan Dawson last year, right?
Yep.
What a great guy he is, and what an amazing student of the game. I remember meeting him when he was young, like back in like 2005, doing some clinic, and he was talking to me about his two go-to moves. Like if it's a righty on me, I kind of just rip him, and if it's a lefty on me, I swim him. And he just kind of explained how he does all that stuff. But man, that guy is surgical, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he's the best. Like I'm grateful I got to play with him for a little while. Like he's as good as it gets. Teammate, friend, mentor, all that stuff. And I've learned a ton from him and continue to learn a ton from him. But I mean, I'm watching everybody, you know, like as just this preseason, like Chris Bushy is just, I'm like so impressed with him. I think he's going to have a huge year in Toronto, and like just the way he's he moves, like never stops moving. You know, his kind of motor and just his understanding of everything has been eye-opening for me, both like excited to play with him and just trying to learn from him too. You know, but I'm watching Teat, I'm watching Dane, I'm watching Lyle Thompson, Ressa Terrace, Curtis Dixon. I try to like, you know, there's like a lot of lefties that I just like admire their game, but it's hard to kind of, you know, shift your mindset. But I'm watching a lot of the righties. You know, but I'm like, I'd say I probably don't watch a ton of PLL games other than like scouting and preparing. Like the NLL, like I'll watch the other games just because I feel like I want to like learn a little bit more. Not that I don't have to in field. I just kind of find myself gravitating towards some more NLL and just trying to like consume as much as I can and apply stuff. But I'd say those guys are probably, you know, Robert Church is another one, especially like playing with Matthews now. But I'm watching a lot of guys.
It's actually so sick to be able to play in Canada too. You know, it'd be nice if you had a, you know, New Jersey team or something, you wouldn't have to travel, but to be able to get up into the box across culture though, isn't it so unique and cool?
Oh, 100%. I had never, you know, now I'm used to it and I still think it's really cool. But like when I was going through it as a rookie at 24, like I'd never been to Canada. I didn't know anything about box. Like I couldn't have told you all the teams in the NLL. I didn't know anything. So, I mean, it was just cool going to Canada and then being like completely immersed in box lacrosse culture, not really knowing anyone or anything, was just like a phenomenal experience, lacrosse aside. You know, and to play, you know, I don't think it's controversial to say like that's the center of Canadian lacrosse. Like, I mean, I think, you know, BC certainly as well, but you know, being right there in Ontario and then like being at the track alone up there in Oakville is like, it's pretty awesome. So, you know, I'm pretty thankful just for that experience in lacrosse. And it's like, it's so funny because, you know, your typical American kid just like has no concept of that world. And I was example number one, like lacrosse was my life. Has been my life for so long. And then I just didn't even know about this whole other lacrosse world. And that people do now because, you know, there's more Canadian players playing in college lacrosse and in pro lacrosse and all that stuff. But, you know, for me, I had no concept of it. And to kind of go in completely fresh, like right into the center of like box lacrosse universe was pretty awesome.
Yeah. It's so fun just to talk box with so many people, the coaches, the players, the people that you meet. The passion for it is so deep. And it's just, I don't know. I spent a lot of summers watching my kids play up there and just kind of getting entrenched into, you know, into the culture in St. Catharines or in Coquitlam, and just their people are, they're so into it. It's just like lacrosse in the US in the sense that everyone's who's into it is completely hooked, but it's just like a little bit of a different culture. And it's really cool just to learn. You never knew what a Minto Cup really was or a Man Cup and how important it is to all those players to have been able to play junior A lacrosse. And do you ever wish that you had gotten a chance to play a little junior A?
Oh yeah. I mean, it like wasn't even on my radar though. Like I didn't even know what it was. Like, I remember, like Mike McDonald came back to school. They won.
With Whippy.
But there's he like, I don't know how, like, I don't know if there's a better way, but like he was so Canadian. Like when, like, 'cause you could just tell he had like, you know, just spent however long, wherever those games were, the playoffs or those crazy seven games. You know, and
I know, seven game series, and yeah, when you're like 21,
he was like, he could hardly walk. He like wasn't gonna play all fall, and it was just like he couldn't get out of like box lacrosse like locker room mode. And it was just, it was the clash of cultures at school. And Mikey coming back from that was like my first taste into that world. But yeah, I mean, it just like wasn't even on my radar when I was in college. Yeah, I think I benefited from it so much. I think I would have loved it. You know, it just wasn't on my radar. I wish I had. You know, when people ask me whether or not they should do it, you know, it's always a yes. Like, I just think it's, again, like beyond just benefiting your game, I just think it's great life experience.
It is. I agree. It's so different.
It's so different. You know, and it's not to say like field or box lacrosse culture, one is better than the other, but I do think they kind of like could enrich the other, you know what I mean? Like, I think they, you can take things from both of them. And I think like that sort of experience, like going and like living with a family and, you know, in Canada and going to the rink and like working out together, being away from home and just like living the lacrosse life for a summer. I think like, again, like your game aside, I just think it's a pretty cool life experience.
Like college lacrosse without classes.
Yeah. Yeah. you're pretty much like a true pro almost. And again,
by the way, Mike McDonald's sister, Jamie McDonald's at Princeton right now. And she is a nasty lefty, man. You can tell she's got a box background.
I know. It's so cool. I mean, it makes me feel old. Jamie was like, I feel like in like elementary school or something when, you know, we first got to college, and to see her ripping it up now is really awesome. And Mikey said that she always would, which is awesome. Like, I'm telling you, like when she gets there, she's going to rip it up. And now she is, which is awesome.
It really is. Well, Tommy, man, I couldn't be more, I couldn't have enjoyed this anymore. I love talking lacrosse. I love talking lacrosse with you. I've been a huge fan for a long time, and it was so cool to hear your, you know, what your thoughts on your teammates and on field and on box and on Batesy and all of it. So good luck this season. Hope you get healthy soon, and I'll be watching from afar.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on, and likewise all around.